truant ghost of some unburied corpse. Only duty to the nascent Alexander kept her from mounting a sudden, glorious, and fatal counterattack against her pursuers, the quickest way to join her sisters. Finally, the search moved on. A trail of clues, disrupted traffic monitors, inexplicably triggered fire alarms, disabled security devices, led her pursuers toward a planetary defense base at the southern edge of the city, which the Imperials moved hastily to reinforce. Alexander had orchestrated these deceptions as the commando lay motionless, teasing pursuit away. Let the Imperials guard their space defenses. The planet's armaments did not interest the compound mind. It wanted information. Alexander sought secrets. A tapping came on the metal door of the compartment, a tattoo in the distinctive rhythms of Rick's battle language. The commando rolled out of her hiding place, unfolding into a human shape like a marionette pulled by its strings from a box, and found herself facing a small librarian drone. Alexander never narrowcast instructions to the Rixwoman. She was incompatible with the Empire-born mind. Rather, the compound mind guided its commando through a host of avatars. Gardening robots, credit terminal screens, traffic signals sputtering, battle binary. The drone wheeled about and headed down the hall of the still-evacuated library, its single rubber wheel emitting a mousy squeak as it accelerated. Herd favored one leg as she followed, circulation returning with painful pricks and needles after the lengthy confinement. The librarian drone moved almost too fast for her, and its squeaking wheel tortured her high-frequency hearing. Herd felt the slightest temptation to kick the small machine, even though it was a messenger of her god. It had been long 7 hours in that compartment, and the Ricks were not completely without emotion. The librarian led Herd to a staircase and whirred down a spiral ramp scaled to its small size as she limped down the stairs in pursuit. They descended to a deep sub-basement of the library, a place of low ceilings, narrow hallways choked with unshelved data bricks, and dim red lighting tuned for sensitive drone eyes. The Rickswoman, her circulation restored by the long climb, slipped deftly after the squeaking librarian. In a dark corner of the sub-basement, reached through a heavy blast door and smelling of disuse, though it was very clean, the drone halted and extended its data plug. It wrapped on a shelf encased in metal and webbed with security fractals and the Imperial glyph for medical records. Herd was fluent in Imperial Navy iconography. Herd charged her blaster and cycled the weapon's output down to a cutting torch. She brought the white-hot finger at its muzzle across the dense weave of security fractal, melting circuitry and metal alike. The library system detected this depredation and sent a flurry of messages to the local police, the political apparatus, and the winter and summer homes of the master librarian. All these were intercepted by Alexander, who responded with the official codes for a maintenance procedure. This part of the library was rated for apparatus-grade secrets, but even the most extensive security did not anticipate the entire planet's infrastructure being in the hands of the enemy. In the data's systemic sense, of course, Alexander was not the enemy at all, merely an unwanted aspect of self. Like an autoimmune disease, the defensive measures of the body infometric had been churned against itself. With the alarm quelled, the librarian drone watched quietly as Herd worked. The metal of the security case was slowly reduced to burn-fringed panels stacked on the hallway floor. Smoke rose to curl around insensate detectors on the ceiling, and the drone reached its data plug into the case and began to probe one brick after another, searching for the faint scent of the data it sought. The secret implementation specs of the Empress's confidant, the key that would unlock its recordings of her final moments alive. The compound mind smiled as fresh information began to trickle in through the narrow pipeline of the drone's data plug. Alexander was the master, was the data here on Legis 15. Whatever secrets it chose to seek would eventually be found. Soon, another weapon would be in its hands. Senator. So I was right. Roger Niles had said this at least 5 times over the last hour. He repeated it with the glazed look of someone told of a friend's unexpected death, the periodic iterations necessary to fight off fresh surges of disbelief. You sound surprised, Oxum said. I was hoping to be wrong. They were in Niles's den, the most secure room among her senatorial offices. The jagged spires of communication gear reddened in the setting sun, soaking the insect cities in blood. Niles was half in data fugue, trying to predict who the other members of the War Council might be. Oxum wanted forewarning about the personalities who would surround her in the Council, the agendas and constituencies that would be represented there. "One from the lackey party," Niles said. "Probably not toothless old Higgs, though. The Emperor will pick whoever is really running things in loyalty these days." "Raz Impar Henders?" "What makes you say that?" "He's first term." "So am I. He's the new power and loyalty. His seat isn't even safe." "I can feel it, Roger." Niles frowned, but Oxum could see his fingers begin to flicker as he redirected his efforts. The Senator hovered in her own synesthetic wash of data, searching the forum gossip channels and open caucuses, the news wires and polling engines. She wanted to know if her legislation, presented and then hastily withdrawn, had left any traces on the body politic. Somewhere in the hordes of media analysts, muckrakers and political junkies, someone must have wondered what that strange and massive omnibus meant. It was only a matter of time before someone with the interest and expertise would decode the legislation, unravelling the skein of taxes, liens and laws. Of course, in a few days, possibly hours, the news of the Rix raid would become public. Hopefully, the reordering of power alignments and alliances, the panicked shift of markets and resources, the tidal data surge of war would overwhelm any notice of her legislation. That was fine with Oxum. It was one thing to take jabs at the Emperor in times of peace, quite another when Empire was threatened, and still another when sitting on his war council. Most importantly, the young senator didn't want it to look as if her seat on the council had been bought with the withdrawal of the legislation. At least, it hadn't seemed that way to her. "Someone from the Plague Axis as well," Niles announced. "Why, for heaven's sake?" "I can feel it," he said flatly. Oxum smiled. 30 years into their shared career, and he still hated when she made appeals to her empathy. It offended his sense of politics as a human enterprise, as the human enterprise. Niles still felt that the offshoots of synesthetic implants were somehow superhuman. "But the Plague Axis? He must be kidding." The Risen Empire was riven between the living and the dead, and the Plague Axis were a sort of twilight zone. They were the carriers of ancient diseases and the repositories of the old congenital defects. When humanity had started governing its own genetic destiny millennia before, too few traits had been selected for and hordes of information irretrievably lost. Too late, eugenists had realized that most undesirable traits concealed advantages. Sickle cell conferred resistance to dormant diseases. Autism was inextricably linked to genius. Certain cancers stabilized whole populations in ways that were not entirely understood. The Plague Axis, germline natural humans subject to every whim of evolution, were essential to maintain the limited diversity of an over-engineered population. They were the controls in the vast experiment that was Imperial humanity. But to have them represented in the War Council? Oxum might have her own infirmity, her own madness, but she still shivered at the thought of lepers. The Senator brought forward the list she and Niles had constructed. By tradition, the Council will have 9 members, including the Emperor. Balance was the main priority. For the Senate to delegate real war-making power to the Council, all factions had to be represented. The major power blocks of Empire were relatively fixed, but the individual pieces that would fit into each of those places at the table were as variable as cards in a hand of poker. How the Emperor filled those spaces would determine the course of this war. Interrupting these thoughts, a chime sounded in her secondary hearing, a powerful signal that broke through all other data. The note was low-pitched, the steady, awesome sound of the largest pipe on a church organ. But it carried a froth of higher frequencies. The indistinct breath of a distant sea, the fluttering of birds' wings, the stray high pitches of an orchestra tuning. The sound was sovereign, unmistakable. "Council is called," Nara Oxum said. She could see the overlays of secondary sight falling away from Niles' face, his attention slowly focusing on the here and now, like some subterranean creature emerging into unfamiliar sunlight. With his data veil removed, Niles regarded her through limpid eyes, his powerful mind for once reflected in his gaze. He spoke carefully. Nara, do you remember the crowds? He meant the crowds on Vasthold, back in her first campaigns, when she had finally put the terror of madness behind her. Of course, Roger, I remember. Unlike those of most of the Empire, Vasthold's politics had never become hostage to the media feeds. There, politics was a kind of street theater. Issues were fought out face-to-face in the dense cities, in the house-to-house combat of street parades, in basement gatherings, and around park bonfires. Impromptu debates, demonstrations, and out-of-out brawls were the order of the day. To escape her old fear of masses of people, Oxum had agreed to deliver a nominating speech at a political rally. But with a willful perversity, she had only partially suppressed her empathy that day, daring the childhood demons to visit again. At first, the roiling psyches of the crowd assumed their familiar shape, a massive beast of ego and conflict, a hungry storm that wanted to consume her, incorporate her into its raging glut of passions. But Oxum had become an adult, her own ego grown stronger behind the protective barrier of the apathy drug. With her image and voice augmented by the public address system, she shouted down the old demons, rode the throng like a wild horse, worked their emotions with words, gestures, even the rhythm of her breathing. That day, she found that on the other side of terror could be found power. Niles nodded. He had watched those powerful memories cross her face. We're very far from them now, those crowds. In the pretense of this place, it's easy to forget the real world that you came here to represent. I haven't forgotten, Roger. Remember, I haven't been awake as long as you. For me, it's only been 2 years, not 10. One hand went to his graying hair, a smile on his face. Just remember, then, he said, your cunning whirls of legislation will now represent acts of war. Violence will be done and lives lost in the name of every decision you make. Of course, Roger. You have to understand the Rick's frontier isn't as far away as all that. Not for me. A frown appeared on his face. She hadn't told anyone, not even Niles, about her affair with Laurent Zai. It had seemed such a brief and sudden thing, and now it was, in Niles's framework, over a decade ago. Someone very close to me is there, Niles. He's at the front. I'll keep him in mind as a stand-in for all those distant, threatened lives. Roger Niles's eyes narrowed, his high forehead wrinkling with surprise. His powerful mind must be searching for whom she might mean. Oxum was glad to know that she could still keep some things secret from her chief advisor. She was pleased that she had told no one. The affair remained hers and Lawrence alone. Senator Nara Oxum rose. The sound of the Imperial summons hadn't faded completely from her secondary hearing. The chime shimmered like the toll of some giant bell vibrating into perpetuity. Oxum wondered if it might actually get louder should she fail to answer its summons. Niles's face became distant again, easing back into data. Oxum knew that after she had gone, he would worry her words and would plumb the vast store of his data trove to discover whom she meant, and that eventually he would discover Laurent Zai. And it crossed her mind that by then, her lover might already be dead. I take your concerns with me, Roger. This war is very real. Thank you, Senator. The trust of Vasthold is with you. The old ritual phrase to which senators were sworn before they left Vasthold for 50 years. Niles uttered it so sadly that she turned to look at his face again. But already the veil had fallen over him. He descended into his virtual realm, searching an empire's worth of data for answers to a war. For a moment, he looked small and forlorn under his towering equipment, the weight of empire upon him, and she stopped at the door. She had to show him, to let Niles see the token of love she carried. Roger. Oxum held up a small black object in her hand, striped with yellow warning circuitry. A single-purpose remote, encoded with a senatorial urgent message. It was marked with her personal privilege, highest priority transmission over the Empire's entanglement net, one-time encryption, sealed eyes only under penalty of blood, and keyed to her DNA, her pheromonal profile and voice print. Niles looked at the object, his eyes clearing. She had his attention. I may be using this while sitting in the War Council. Will it work from the Diamond Palace? Yes. Legally speaking, the Rubicon Pale extends from the Forum to wherever you go, along a nanometer-wide gerrymander. She smiled, visualizing this Baroque legal fiction. How long will it take the message to get to Legis 15? His eyebrows raised at the planet's name. Now he knew that her lover was truly at the front. How long is the message? One word? Niles nodded. Entangled communications are instantaneous, but unless the shared quantum packets the receiver is using were physically transported directly from home... They were, she said. So he's on a warship. Then no time at all. Niles paused, searching Oxum's eyes for some sign of her intentions. May I ask what the message is? Don't, she said. Executive officer. Hobbs stood nervously at attention as Zai worked gestural codes at the small interface beside the observation blister's door. She stared down into the void. The usual vertigo created by the transparent floor was gone, replaced by the crushing weight of failure. A dead, empty feeling pulsed in her gut. A bright taste, like a metal coin under the tongue, fouled her mouth. Her careful study of the hostage rescue, the sleepless hours spent poring over every frame of the engagement from dozens of viewpoints, had amounted to nothing. She had not saved her captain, had only managed to make him furious. There seemed to be no way to bend the rigid spine of Zai's Vaden upbringing. No way to convince him that it had been the politicals and not military personnel who had botched the rescue. The initiate had gone down against the captain's protests, waving an imperial writ. Why couldn't Captain Zai see that he was blameless? At least they should take the evidence before a military court. Zai was a hero, an elevated officer. He couldn't throw his life away for the sake of brutal, pointless tradition. Executive Officer Hobbs was from a utopian world, an anomaly among the military classes. She had rejected the hedonistic ways of her own home world, attracted by the rituals of the Greys, their traditions and discipline. Their lives of service made the Greys otherworldly to Cathery, uninterested in the brief pleasures of the flesh. For Hobbs, Captain Lawrence Zai embodied this Grey stoicism. Quiet and strong on his cold bridge, his craggy face uncorrected by cosmetic surgery. But underneath, Hobbs could see the wounded humanity in him, the marks of his unbelievable suffering on Duntu, the melancholy dignity with which he carried himself, the regret every time he lost a man. And now her captain's sense of honor demanded suicide of him. Suddenly, the religious surety and great traditions that Hobbs found so compelling seemed simply barbaric, a brutal web in which her captain had trapped himself, a willful and pathetic blindness. Zai's acquiescence was far more bitter than his anger. He turned from the controls. Steady yourself, he ordered. The floor lurched as if the ship had accelerated. Hobbs barely kept her footing, the universe become briefly unhinged around her. Then the transparent surface under her stabilized and she saw what had happened. The blister had become a true bubble, floating free of the ship, tethered only by the ship's gravity generators, filled only with the air and heat trapped within its walls. The gravity felt wrong. Cast across the void by the Lynx's generators to create a tentative up in this small pocket of air. Hobbs's vertigo returned with a vengeance. We can talk freely now, Hobbs. She nodded slowly, careful not to disturb her plaintive inner ear. You don't seem to understand what's at stake here, Zai said. For the first time in 16 centuries, a member of the Imperial household has died. And she was lost not to a freak accident, but to enemy action. Enemy action, sir? She dared. Yes, damn it. The Ricks caused all this, he shouted. It doesn't matter who pulled the trigger of that blaster, whether it was a Ricks playing dead or an imbecile political gone mad from an insertion injury. It doesn't matter. The Empress is dead. They won, we lost. Hobbs focused on her boots, willing a visible flaw into existence below them. You're about to have command of this vessel, Hobbs. You must understand that with command comes responsibility. I ordered that rescue. I must stand by its results no matter what. She looked at the space that separated them from the Lynx. No sound vibrations could cross that gap. The captain had made sure of that. She could speak freely. You objected to the initiate going down, sir. He had a writ, Hobbs. My objection was pointless posturing. Your rescue plan was sound, sir. The Emperor made the mistake, giving those fools a writ. The captain sucked a harsh breath in through his teeth. However cautious Zai was being, Hobbs knew that he hadn't expected to hear words like this. That's sedition, executive officer. It's the truth, sir, He took two steps toward her, closer than Vaden fastidiousness had ever allowed him before. He spoke clearly in a voice just above a whisper. "Listen, Hobbs. I'm dead, a ghost. There is no tomorrow for me whatsoever. No truth can save me. You seem confused about that, and you also seem to think that the truth will protect you and the rest of the Lynx as officers. It will not." She could barely meet his gaze. A few flecks of saliva borne on his harsh words had reached her face. They stung her. They were shameful. The bright sun was rising behind the bulk of the Lynx. The blister's sun was polarized, but she could feel the temperature rising in the unregulated bubble. A trickle of sweat ran under one arm. "If there are any more briefings like the one a few minutes ago, you'll be killing yourself and my other officers. I will not permit it." She swallowed, blinked in the suddenly harsh sunlight. Dizziness rose in her. Was the oxygen running out so fast? "Stop trying to save me, Hobbs. That's an order. Is it clear enough?" She just wanted him to stop. She wanted to return to the solid boundaries of the ship, to surety and order, safety from this void.
"Yes, sir."
"Thank you," he spat. Captain's eye turned and took a step away, facing the bauble of Legis 15 hanging in the blackness. He uttered a command, and she felt the tug of the frigate reclaiming its tiny satellite. They said nothing more as the blister reattached itself to the Lynx. When the door opened, Zai dismissed her with a wave. She could see the black, single-purpose remote in his hand, his blade of error. "Report to the bridge, Executive Officer. You will be needed there shortly." To take command. A field promotion, they would call it. "Do not disturb me again." The executive officer obeyed, stepping from the blister into the rush of cool, fresh air that surged from the Lynx. Hobbs felt she should glance back at her captain, if only to create a last memory to replace that of his angry, spitting face centimeters from hers. But she couldn't bring herself to turn around. Instead, she wiped her face and ran. "Commando." The librarian drone putted among the data bricks, a dull-witted child unsure of which toy to play with. It moved fitfully, searching for some secret entombed within their crisp, rectangular forms. Hurd, having emptied the security case, sat patiently by, listening for any sound from above. At first, the library basement had made her nervous. The Ricks didn't like being trapped below ground. She and her drop sisters had been raised in space, tumbling into gravity wells only on training exercises and combat missions. Hurd felt crushed under the weight of metal and stone. An hour ago, she had left the fidgeting drone behind and reconnoitred the ground floor, installing motion alarms at each entrance. But the surrounding streets were empty. The pursuers had clearly moved on, following some false trail created by Alexander. And this part of the city was still evacuated from the militia's search. She and her drone had the library to themselves. It was hard to imagine that the crude little device was actually animated by Alexander, an intelligence of planetary scale. The drone's single wheel allowed it to whir efficiently through the neat stacks, but here, among the debris of the ruined case, it was reduced to unsure, stuttering motions. A unicyclist negotiating a construction site. Hurd watched the comical display with a smile. Even the company of a speechless robot was better than being alone. Suddenly, the drone seemed to flinch, plunging its data plug farther into the brick before it with an obscene hunger. After a moment of vibrating wildly, the little device released the brick and spun around. Dodging debris with renewed vigor, it took off down the narrow aisle at top speed. Hurd stood slowly, her body rippling as she went through a 2-second regime that stretched each of her 1,100 muscles in turn. No point in rushing. The drone could not outrun her. With a single leap, Hurd cleared the rubbish of her vandalism, then turned back toward the pile. She set her blaster low and wide and sprayed the data bricks with enough radiation to erase their contents and any clues as to what Alexander had found here. The fire suppression node above her head chirped, but was overridden before it could spray any foam. Hurd turned and ran. In a few long-legged strides, she was right behind the little drone, strange companions in the dark stacks of the abandoned library. The whine of its monowheel blended with the subtler ultrasonic whir of her servo motors. She followed it up the ramps through the basement levels and to the ground floor. The drone rolled squeaking among the staff desks. and through a portal in the wall scaled exactly to its size, like a door for pets. This obstacle course was designed for the drone's use, not that of 2-meter Amazons, and the challenge put a smile back on the commando's face. Hurd dove, leapt, and weaved, sticking close to her small charge, which brought her to a back office. The drone skidded to a halt beside an unruly pile of plastic squares, roughly the size of a human hand. The Rixwoman picked one of the devices up. It was a secured hand screen, a rare physical storage and display device in a universe of omnipresent infrastructure and secondary sight. Commandos, of course, fought on hostile worlds where the local infrastructure was inaccessible, and Hurd had used such a device before. A library of this type would use them to allow its patrons to exit with sensitive information, the kind that had to stay outside the public sphere. The hand screen would be equipped with limited intelligence and governors to keep the wrong persons from accessing its contents. The drone plugged into one of the devices, and the two were locked in a momentary shuddering embrace. Then the screen hummed to life. The Rixwoman took it from the drone. On the top page was a map of the planet, a route marked in pulsing colors. She worked the limited interface with her quick fingers and found that the machine contained thousands of pages, a detailed plan for reaching her next goal, the entangled communications facility in the polar sink, the gateway of all information into and out of the Legis system. 4,000 kilometers away. Hurd sighed and looked accusingly at the little drone. Every Rick's sibling group who had volunteered for this raid had realized that it was fundamentally a suicide mission. To plant the seed of a compound mind was a glorious blow against the risen empire, and the raiders had succeeded beyond all expectation. For the first time, a Rick's mind had emerged upon an imperial world. That a full-scale war might result was irrelevant. The Ricks did not distinguish between states of war and peace with the various political entities that bordered upon their serpentine amalgam of bases. Their society was a constant jihad, a ceaseless missionary effort to propagate compound minds. But 4,000 kilometers through hostile territory? Alone? Generally, suicide missions at least had the advantage of being brief. Hurd flipped among the pages on the hand screen and found a map of the planetary maglev system. At least she wouldn't have to walk. She also discovered the medical records of a particular conscript in the Legis militia, one who resembled Hurd and had expertise necessary for the mission. The Rix commander realized that Alexander wanted her to go undercover, to pass as a standard Imperial human. How distasteful. She moved toward the library exit. Best to take advantage of the evacuated streets while she could. The squeal of the drone's wheel followed Hurd to the door. It darted in front of her, almost spinning out of control in its haste to block her path. Hurd was brought up short. Did it think it was coming? Then she realized its purpose. Alexander had downloaded the precious secret it sought through the memory of the little drone. There might be some residue, some backup somewhere from which the Imperials could extract what Alexander had learned. The commando set her blaster too high and leveled it at the drone. The machine backed away. That was just Alexander being careful to keep Hurd out of the blast radius. But the little device seemed nervous on its single, unsteady wheel, as if it knew it was about to die. Hurd felt a strange reluctance to destroy the drone. For a few hours, it had been a companion here on this lonely, un-Rix world, a little sister of sorts. That was an odd way to think of the drone, which was an embodiment of one of her gods, but she felt as if she were killing a friend. Still, orders were orders. She closed her eyes and pressed the firing stud. Plasma leapt from the mouth of the blaster, disintegrating the drone in a gout of fire and metal parts, which Hurd leapt over, passing into the dark night beyond. Running between quiet buildings, she shook off the feeling of loneliness. Alexander was still here all around her, watching through every doorway monitor, concealing her passage with feints and deceptions. She was the compound mind's one human agent on this hostile world. Beloved. Hurd ran fast and hard. She was doing the will of the gods. Senator. This time the journey to the Diamond Palace was by tunnel, a route Senator Oxum hadn't known existed. The trip lasted seconds. The acceleration registered by her middle ear seemed insufficient for the distance. Oxum was met by a young aspirant in the political apparatus. His black uniform creaked, new leather, as they walked down the broad hallway. Although her apathy was set very low to allow her abilities full rein for the first session of the council,